Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and Manhattan. You are listening to BashaniRadio.com. New York City, always talking about everything. Everything. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. On demand, powerful talk radio. We global, and you can do nothing about it. BashaniRadio.com. Always talking about everything. Keep it locked.
Welcome to the Jazz and Tech Lounge with Lady Z. Actually, I should have you do the introduction.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Jazz and Tech Lounge with Lady Z, a podcast about the secret to success in technology, music, and business on Bashani Radio, iHeartRadio, and iTunes. Bashani Radio, always talking about everything from New York City. You can listen to the Jazz and Tech Lounge with Lady Z on any mobile phone or tablet device. The Jazz and Tech Lounge with Lady Z, where we explore tech and enjoy the music and learn the secrets to music and technological success. Please follow us online at www.ladyz.com and all social networks at Lady Z.
Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
There's no point in doing an introduction when you have the legendary Al Chalk. Now, for my listeners who may not know who Al Chalk is, he is the voiceover of so many trailers, TV shows, and other characters. So I was watching Fringe the other day. I binge-watched the whole season. And I heard a voice that sounds so familiar. And I called Al. I couldn't reach him, so I called someone else. And they were like, oh, yeah, he did that. So I found the 411 on that. So, ladies and gentlemen, I want to introduce today's guest, the voiceover extraordinaire and musician, just an all-around awesome guy, Al Chalk. So I'm sitting here. I'm sitting here in Summit Recording Studios. It's recording and rehearsal studios, right?
It's Summit Rehearsal and Recording Studios.
Yeah. So. Summit Rehearsal and Recording Studio. I'm here interviewing Al Chalk, and I'm just super excited to pick his brain and have him reminisce a little bit about his success in the music and entertainment industries. So you want to share some of your failures?
No, my only failure is that it took me so long to meet you.
Oh yes, this interview took over a year to happen. But I'm glad. I'm glad
we took care of that today.
Yeah. So for my audience, because I've known you for quite some time, yes. We've had a lot of great conversations.
3 years.
Yes. Yeah. It's been a while. So how did you get started in music?
Actually, it started in my mother's kitchen. My mother, a lovely woman with really no musical background. She loved music, though. She was an avid listener to jazz and funk, some classical stuff, gospel.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that was the beginning. I was about 3 or 4 years old, sitting on my mother's kitchen floor, and she had her pots out one day. And just to let your fans and your audience know, I'm a percussionist and drummer, and that's kind of how it got started. I used to take my mother's ladles and beat on the pots and pans. And eventually at age 7, my dad got me my first set of drums, and I still remember the name. It was a cartoon character that used to come on back in the mid-early 50s called Rudy Gazzuti.
Rudy Gazzuti?
Rudy Gazzuti. He was kind of the precursor to Howdy Doody.
Okay.
I'm dating myself, but I was born in 49, in case anybody wants to figure that out. Anyway, Rudy Gazzuti came on every day. I was an average little, crazy little kid and a fan, and I watched him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, while my mother was making lunch or feeding me or, you know, whatever. And he used to play the drums on the show. And, of course, I didn't have a drum set. So, again, to replicate the sound of drums, I discovered my mother's pots and pans. And that's kind of how I got started in music.
Oh, wow. So
and then eventually I got, you know, my dad for my 15th birthday. Actually, it started my 10th birthday. He bought me my first play set of drums.
They were okay, out of okay. Paper, you know? Oh, okay, okay.
And eventually they were just trashed out.
Yeah, tore it up.
He upped the ante when I got 15th, and on my 15th birthday, he took me downtown to a pawn shop.
Downtown
New York.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm from New York City originally, born and raised. And we went up in this attic to this big, huge pawn shop. I don't even know if it's there, on the Bowery.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy had racks and racks. It looked like a stable,
mm-hmm.
you know, the way it was designed. But they had different tiers, and he'd have a set of Ludwigs on one shelf, you know, and then he'd have Gretsch. Then he had Slingerland. Those were the popular drums back in the day. And I saw a ruby red sparkle set on the top level. And that's the one.
Of course, you wanted the one on the very, very top.
Of course. No doubt.
So you started playing drums, and then after you graduated from high school, what did you do then?
It was a few years, but I wanted to go to college, but, you know, I wanted to pursue acting and music. And I tried to get into Juilliard, and that didn't really work out. So I went to New York Conservatory of Music after that and studied for about 5 years, and then studied privately
mm-hmm.
with a few different coaches and teachers to learn theory and music. And after that, I got bitten by the acting bug a little bit. I started doing off-Broadway theater in New York. And still kind of work out as a musician, you know,
mm-hmm.
at night, you know, hitting the clubs, sitting in with different bands, whether they be jazz or Latin or funk.
Mm-hmm.
And I played literally with every type, every genre of band and musical entity.
So who did you play with during that time?
During that time? Let me see, that was, oh man, there were a bunch of bands. There was a woman, and I can't think of her name, a lady sax player in New York, and she used to play at a club in Queens, and again, my memory fails me, because we're going way mm-hmm. back into the way back machine. And when you're a young man, you remember everything, but as you get older, after the drugs, and the alcohol, and the women, and the marriages, and the bad children, I'm sorry. I'm okay now, see.
They're there.
Thank you. But I'll try to remember. Her first name was Thelma.
Thelma.
Yeah.
Thelma the sax player.
Thelma the sax player. Okay. And she was a stripper, too.
She was a stripper and played the saxophone.
And played not at the same time. She would
Of course, not at the same time.
She would do a show, two shows nightly.
Uh-huh.
And she had an organ player on B3 Heaven.
Mm-hmm.
She had me on percussion, a drummer, bass player. That was it.
Oh, wow. So it was a quartet.
Yeah, quartet.
Okay. Cool.
It's
so,
very cool, too.
So you've told me you've played with, was it?
I've worked with such luminaries.
Drop some names.
Barry White for
Barry
8 years.
Barry White, yeah. For 8 years.
8 years.
You toured with him.
Yes, and in the studio with the Love Unlimited Band Orchestra.
That's awesome. What was that experience like?
It was incredible. Mm-hmm. I had always been a huge fan of Barry's music.
Mm-hmm.
And I was actually playing with another band called Carnival with a K.
Okay.
Kind of a cross fusion, jazz, funk, Afrobeat
mm-hmm.
Band that two friends of mine had organized.
Okay.
And it kind of brought me in later on after they had three singers. It was a great band. And we showcased at SIR in Hollywood for Barry
mm-hmm.
on one occasion. And Barry came in with Glodine. He was married to Glodine with, you know, the nails at the time.
Uh-huh.
It was his first wife, second wife. And she also sung with them. She was part of the amalgam, the Love Unlimited singers.
Her
two cousins. But anyway, long story short, Barry heard me play timbales, and he walked over and he said, And I can't do Barry White, but he said, "Red home, show you red. You a bad motherfucker." I don't know if you can use that on the air, but that's what he said to me. Because Barry would always express himself. Uh-huh. He was from the hood.
Right. That's what he said to you.
He said, "You a bad motherfucker."
Like a line right out of Shaft.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And, wow. You know, that kind of jumpstart the relationship between Barry and I.
Uh-huh.
The next thing I know, the guitar player had been working with Barry, by the way. Let me throw that in.
Okay, okay.
His name was Clarence Charles. Sweet guys. We're still friends. Wherever you are, Clarence. I think he's down in he's from Trinidad originally.
Oh, okay, okay.
He's gone back to do teaching and some other things. But anyway, Barry had already been using Clarence in the band.
Okay.
And said he'd like to use me.
Oh, wow.
Tour, that kind of, and then the next tour happened to be, I think, it was Brazil.
Wow.
We did some local things at the Staples Center.
Uh-huh. The Staples Center in New York?
No, actually, it wasn't even the Staples Center, because I don't think the Staples Center was the sports arena.
Mm-hmm.
And
you're talking about L.A.?
L.A.
Okay,
yeah,
okay.
Because Barry lives in L.A., or did live in L.A.
Oh, okay.
And he liked to, you know, perform. Mm-hmm. For his hometown audience, we performed at the Sports Arena and the Forum. The Forum.
Was in Inglewood.
In Inglewood.
That was your first gig with Barry
at home. Yeah, right. But the first away gig was in Brazil.
So that's how you moved. Well, you were here in Hollywood with Carl.
Oh, yeah,
right.
Yeah, I was living here. I moved out here in '77 from New York to do a movie.
Oh, okay.
A film with Jay Leno and Van Drescher. It was a movie about rock and roll. '50s, kind of not a biopic per se, but it touched on the life of Alan Freed, who was a notable disc jockey and allegedly coined the words rock and roll back in the '50s.
Oh, okay, yeah. Cool. What was the name of that movie again?
It's called American Hot Wax.
American Hot Wax. Yeah. Okay. I remember seeing that on your IMDb page.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm really proud of that movie. Again, not necessarily because I really had anything major to do with it. I wasn't a principal. We were kind of the principals. It was a collective character called the Chesterfields.
So what was the name of your character in that movie?
Al.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
That's a stretch, isn't it?
Right. Yeah. So I want to move on to In Living Color, because In Living Color was like one of my personal favorite shows growing up.
Okay.
How did you get that voiceover gig?
Again, it was through an earlier hookup with Keenan Ivory Wayans. I got a call from my agent.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, I was with an agency called the Tisherman Agency, and the owner and chief agent Steve Tisherman gave me a call, and he said, "I got a call from this guy." I don't think he was even aware of who Keenan was.
Uh-huh.
And Keenan was still kind of creeping up the comedy ladder.
Right. He wasn't Keenan. He was Keenan.
No, he wasn't. Yeah, he wasn't.
He was Keenan.
Keenan the King.
Right.
And he had done a few movies. I had seen him in, I think he had a small little role in that Hollywood Shuffle.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Robert Townsend.
Robert Townsend directed that. I think he wrote and directed that.
I saw him in that, and I kind of knew, and he was from New York, almost from the same neighborhood in Manhattan. But I didn't know him personally. Anyway, got the call to show up at a studio in Hollywood the next day for a session, and I was doing a lot of trailers at that time, a lot of the edgy Tonight, a major motion picture event that will knock your socks off. Socks, rated R.
You doing something like that?
It's a killer movie. So I did the edgy stuff and was kind of known for that,
I'm
a great storyteller. And he heard something, I don't know what he heard that I did. I had done Shaft around, I did do Shaft, but I did some Shaft promos for Fox was for a syndicated package.
Okay, okay.
Because when the original Shaft that came out by Gordon, Gordon Parks directed it, and Richard Roundtree was in it.
Right.
Iconic film. I was still kind of etching my way through the business, so I didn't do that. But down the road, Fox came out with all of these syndicated packages.
Right.
For distribution, domestically, worldwide. And I did a bunch of movies from that era.
Right.
Exploitation movies in particular. And Shaft was one of them. And he heard that. He dug it. And he had this movie called I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker.
I remember that.
Remember that? And he wanted me to do the Shaft thing, but when we did it, he loved it. He said, man, that's really taut and, you know, suspenseful. But let's go another direction. Let's try something that's a little softer, and I'm going to cut it in the editing bay so that the edgy stuff is there, but the comedic stuff will come off the read. You know what I mean? And I'll put in some of the softer moments from the movie. And there were some very funny things in that movie. Great cast. Isaac Hayes was in it. Bernie, ex-football player, actor. Can't think of his name. But anyway.
And not Jim Brown.
Jim Brown was in it, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So we did that. It took me about maybe three takes. You know, I gave it. The more takes I did, the more Keenan liked.
Okay, okay.
And then we eventually, we had one, I think it was the C take that he really dug. And he said, that's it. Going home. I'm done.
Oh, wow.
And then later on, just to get to the in living portion of the story, about 2 years or 3 years, two years later, because he was developing the show when he was working on I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker.
Right.
That was released. It did. I think it did well. And then Fox approached him to do In Living Color. I got a call from Keenan again, this time personally, and he said, I'd love to have you play with us. You know? And for the next few years, because they had, originally there were a couple of different voices. The great Sid McCoy, who did Soul Train. Sid and I were friends. Rest his soul. But he did a couple of episodes, and there was one other guy, and I can't think of who that is right now. And then when Keenan decided to use me, he said, yeah, we'd like to do this long term, you know, if you're available. And it was fun for me because I live like three blocks from the studio.
Oh, wow.
You know,
that's convenient.
Oh, yeah. I used to walk to the studio or either take the take my bike.
Oh, wow. So what do you think are the three things that contributed the most to your success as a voiceover actor?
Money and women.
Come on now. Seriously.
Contributed was just the fact, the major contribution, see, was I always liked doing it. And when I said money, I was being a little facetious, but it's a great way to make an incredible living. And, you know, I've done all kinds of jobs in my life, you know, prior to college, after college, during college. I drove a cab. I worked for a moving company, schlepping furniture around. I worked in a deep freezer for a poultry factory in New York. I had to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning. So when I found my niche in voiceover acting, or just acting in general, because I know that you have to have the attributes of being a good stage actor, or at least that presence.
Because
it comes from there.
You know? Right.
It's the same chi which is down here.
Right.
You know? I use a lot of the same body language that I would use on the stage to get through different, you know, especially when it's something like a narration or CD-ROM or video games. I do all of that stuff, or I have done that stuff.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome. So I just want to say thank you so much for coming on the show. And until next time, y'all, until next time.
I'll never forget the first time I kissed a girl. It was in the back seat of my dad's old Impala.
Yeah, man, making out in your old man's car. My dad had a Volkswagen. I couldn't do much of anything in the back seat of that thing.
The first time I did it, I was in a little red Corvette with Sheena Easton and Vanity. Or was that Morris?
What out, man?
The craziest thing I ever did was break up with my high school sweetheart.
Man, when it comes to women, we're always doing something crazy.
I know what you mean. One time I poured chocolate all over Sheila. Oh, is that Morris?
Butt out, man.
And you really want to turn a girl on? Put on some Luther Vandross.
Oh, man, that works with some girls. But the guy who really gets them going is Rick James.
You're both wrong. Whenever I want a woman to get wild, all I have to do is...
Bet your bottom dollar that I can make you feel all right. And if I make you holler, yeah, just grit your teeth and hold on tight. I got a lot of money to lose.
What are jeans by Prince? They're everything you're cracked up to be.
Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and Manhattan. You are listening to BashaniRadio.com. New York City, always talking about everything. Everything. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. On demand, powerful talk radio. We global, and you can do nothing about it. BashaniRadio.com. Always talking about everything. Keep it locked.